proclaiming the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Shalom and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. I'm your host, Aaron Broughton, and I want to welcome you to today's program. Today we are going to be discussing a testimony of a believer in Jesus Christ that is Jewish by birth. This is actually coming from the book Famous Hebrew Christians that was written by Dr. Jacob Gardenhouse. And in this book he actually compiles a list. There's 35 names that are mentioned here of Jewish people who came to know Jesus as their own Messiah. By the way, you can even order this book, Famous Hebrew Christians, here at IBJM. Feel free to contact us here at 423-876-8150 to get your copy or go online to IBJM.org. With that in mind, let's now look at the life of Paulus Cassell. Paulus Cassell, he was born in 1821 and lived until 1893. This is what it says. This is compiled by Dr. Gardenhouse. That so outstanding a Jew as Paulus Cassell should become a Christian is a testimony to the truth and power of the gospel and a challenge to the reserve and animosity of non-Christian Jews. Cassell was a star of the first magnitude of the galaxy of great Jews who became convinced and steadfast Christians. Even among those Jews who disparagingly called Jewish Christians Meshuadim, which means renegades or traitors, there have been those who held Cassell in high regard. 13 years before he died, which was in 1893, the Jewish Chronicle, one of the foremost Jewish publications of that time, wrote about him, quote, "A genius like Cassell is always an honor to his former brethren in the faith." Cassell was born in Cilicia on February 27th of 1821. His parents made sure that he received a comprehensive and complete education. He was not only brought up to be learned in Jewish lore and life, but was also sent to public school to acquire a good secular education as well. There he became under the influence of Christian leaders. Once during a Christmas season, the headmaster told the pupils to learn the Christmas story. As a Jew, the young Cassell was not required to carry out that exercise, but he did so anyways. He recited that story in class with such feeling that his delighted teacher kissed him. The fact that a Christian should kiss a Jewish boy made a very deep and lasting impression on Cassell, and its emotional effect remained with him all his life. Indeed, this deep emotional experience might well have been one of the early impressions leading to his conversion some years later. At the age of 34, after much study and inquiry, Cassell realized and laid hold on the veracity of Jesus' claims to be the Messiah of Israel and the Redeemer of the world. Cassell was, in fact, an outstanding student, had a brilliant academic career at the University of Berlin, and went on to establish a reputation as a man of letters. He received many academic and university honors for his valuable contributions to learning and literature. His literary and intellectual abilities were widely acknowledged and were publicly honored when the German Prime Minister appointed him as editor of the Deutsche Reform. For a brief period, Cassell took an active part in politics and became a member of the Prussian Parliament. However, because his editorial and parliamentary responsibilities interfered with his studies, he relinquished both positions after a short time in office. But while he was in Parliament, he was able to frequently defend his fellow Jews against violent attacks of A. Stoker, a fellow parliamentarian and notorious anti-Semite. Cassell's courageous public defense of the Jewish people brought him in a significant degree of popularity among the Jews. Both the Jews and the Christians recognized that his adoption of the Christian faith was not prompted by any ulterior motive. From the moment of his conversion, he became a zealous missionary, for he longed earnestly that his Jewish brethren might share the joy and peace he had known in Christ. His missionary zeal soon became widely known, and when he was a church missions to the Jews, built his church in Berlin in 1846, Cassell was appointed to be the missionary in charge. The church had a spacious sanctuary and capable of containing a congregation of at least 1,000 people. It was regularly filled with worshipers, both Jews and Christians, who were attracted to the quality and power of Cassell's teachings. This has been the life that we've been discussing of Paulus Cassell, and just a good testimony for us to meditate on. We're going to actually finish his story tomorrow, so stay tuned. Now, until then, let's now turn to our teacher and Jewish believer, Brother Mark Oshman, with today's Bible lesson.
Welcome back to our radio broadcast. we pick up on our study of the book of Revelation. In this session, we will continue examining Revelation by looking at the 12th chapter of that book. That chapter opened with this description, quote, "And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars," unquote. By the woman stood a great red dragon, having 7 heads, 10 horns, and 7 crowns on his head. Quote, "His tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth," unquote. Many commentators opine that this passage alluded to the fallen angelic host, those heavenly beings who joined the devil in his rebellion against God. The woman in Revelation 12 brought forth a man-child, quote, "who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron," unquote. This reference pointed to Jesus Christ. As God himself declared in Psalm 2, his son, quote, "shall break them with a rod of iron. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel," unquote. The dragon wanted to devour the child as soon as the woman gave birth. However, God caught up the child unto his throne. Most Bible interpreters agree that the dragon in Revelation 12 depicted the devil, and that the man-child in that chapter was Jesus Christ. However, they disagree regarding the identity of the woman. Some commentators, who focused on the mother-child relationship, argued that the woman in Revelation 12 represented Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ, entitling her the Queen of Heaven. For example, Mary Baker Eddy, the founder of the Christian Science movement, once claimed that the woman in Revelation chapter 12 was her. Needless to say, her interpretation was erroneous, since Mary Baker Eddy did not give birth to a heavenly child. To understand this passage in Revelation chapter 12, a Bible student needs to compare John's vision with Joseph's dream in Genesis chapter 37. Here's what the author of Genesis had to say about Joseph's dream. Quote, "And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it to his brethren, and said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me," unquote. Jacob himself stated that the sun and the moon represented him and Rachel, who, after all, were Joseph's parents. Jacob also stated that the stars denoted Joseph's brothers, the progenitors of the Jewish people. In light of that passage in Genesis 37, the woman in Revelation chapter 12 can depict not an individual woman, but the entire nation of Israel. In Revelation 12, John beheld warfare take place in heaven. Most people might think of heaven as a place where peace always prevails. They need to remember, though, that at the present time, at least, the devil still has access to heaven. After this battle in Revelation chapter 12, though, the devil will no longer have that privilege. John wrote that, quote, "Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels," unquote. Michael the archangel and the devil, formerly an archangel himself, Michael and the devil possessed equal power. God's angels and the devil's angels had equal might, yet God's angels won the battle. Note that neither God the Father nor God the Son played any direct role in this battle. God, as the Creator, has far more power than the devil, who is, after all, a created being. The devil perhaps is mighty, but God is almighty. In Revelation 12, a loud voice proclaimed, quote, "The accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night," unquote. Whenever the devil appeared in heaven, he often functioned as the accuser of God's followers. The devil slandered Job in God's presence in the first chapters of Job. He accused Job of serving God only out of self-interest. In the third chapter of Zechariah, that prophet saw a vision where the devil accused Joshua, the high priest, who stood before God as a representative of the Jewish people. As a result of this defeat in Revelation 12, the devil fell from heaven. According to the Bible, Satan has experienced numerous defeats. He fell from an exalted position as Lucifer, the morning star. In Ezekiel 28, God told him, quote, "I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God," unquote. In Revelation chapter 12, the devil fell from heaven to earth. He will experience another degradation according to Revelation chapter 20. He will go from the earth into the bottomless pit. After the devil's released from the bottomless pit, God will cast him into the lake of fire. Thus, the degradation of the devil can be traced in the following fashion. From a lofty position in heaven, he went to earth, and then after that, he went to the bottomless pit, and finally into the lake of fire and utter destruction. In Revelation chapter 12, a heavenly voice praised believers, saying, quote, "They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death," unquote. This revelation portrayed a threefold battle plan whereby believers can defeat the devil. First and foremost, the blood of Jesus Christ cleanses believers from the penalty of sin. In the first chapter of Ephesians, Paul praised Jesus Christ, quote, "In whom we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins, according to the riches of his grace," unquote. Moreover, the word of those believers' testimony put the lie to the devil's accusations against them. They followed Paul's admonition when, in the first chapter of Philippians, he told his readers to, quote, "Let your conversation be as it becometh the gospel of Christ," unquote. Finally, these believers in Revelation 12 had no hesitation about dying, if such a death was honoring to Jesus Christ. For them, death had no sting, because they knew that death could not separate them from the love of God. Paul illustrated how a Christian should react toward impending death. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, he informed his protege, quote, "I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith," unquote. While those with God in heaven could rejoice, the inhabitants on earth had cause to mourn. A loud voice from heaven exclaimed, quote, "Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil has come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time," unquote. Perhaps Satan believed that he actually had a chance to thwart God. He certainly acted that way when, after his release from the bottomless pit, the devil recruited human armies to fight against God. This indicates that the devil simply will not resign himself to accept God's sovereignty and recognize that God remains in control. The devil cannot successfully fight against God. Since he cannot resist God, however, why do rebellious human beings believe that they can resist God? After the devil's fall, according to Revelation chapter 12, the dragon continued to persecute the woman and her seed. God then gave the woman, quote, "two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, and times, and half a time, from the face of the serpent," unquote. For 3.5 years, God will protect the Jewish people from their enemies. As the author of Psalm 121 put it, quote, "He that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep," unquote. The devil then sent a flood to overcome the woman. In that instance, the earth helped the woman by swallowing the flood, as recorded in Revelation chapter 12. Once again, God will demonstrate his control over the elemental forces of nature, just as he did when he parted the Red Sea for the Israelites. After suffering these defeats in heaven, the devil will wage war against those, quote, "which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ," unquote. This verse may apply to believers who were saved during the time of the tribulation, since church-age Christians will be in heaven at that time. God described two features that will characterize those latter-day believers. They will show their love for God by obeying him, even when faced with satanic opposition. Furthermore, these believers will continue to uphold their testimony for Jesus Christ. Like the apostles mentioned in Acts chapter 4, they will not be able to refrain from speaking about those things they had seen and heard. We've come to the end of another lesson. We invite you to join in for future radio broadcasts about the book of Revelation.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343. Or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.